Macintosh Folklore Radio, written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Spoiled, April 1984. During its short history, the Macintosh team developed a reputation for being spoiled. This wasn't always true, but was certainly the case by the middle of 1984. Steve Jobs was fond of bragging that the Macintosh's designers were Apple's finest engineers, though they weren't always compensated accordingly. Following a shakeup in the Apple II group in early 1981, I received my scheduled 6-month review. I was slated for a nominal raise in salary from $22,000 a year to $24,000. My review came just 2 weeks before I transferred to the Macintosh team, but I thought I should still be given a raise despite switching groups. After working for a few weeks, I decided to approach my new manager, Bud Tribble, about this. "Well, that sounds reasonable to me," Bud told me when I explained the situation, "but there's a problem. I'm only getting paid $20,000 a year." I was shocked that Bud was making so little. The average manager in the Apple II group made at least twice that much per year. I asked Burl Smith about his compensation and found out that he was getting paid even less than Bud, since he began at Apple as a lowly service technician and was given very few increases in salary as his responsibility grew. Less than 2 months ago, the Mac had been Jeff Raskin's iffy research project, and since he had taken over, Steve Jobs hadn't adjusted anyone's salary. The next day, I spoke with Steve and told him about my incipient raise and asked him why, if the work we were doing was so important, Burl and Bud had such low salaries. Steve was unexpectedly nonchalant, professing that he didn't know what their salaries were and that he hadn't given anyone raises because no one had asked for one. He said that we had much more important things to worry about than our salaries, but he had no problem giving all three of us modest raises right away. But even after Steve came through, the Mac team continued to be relatively underpaid compared to the rest of Apple. Rod Holt, the designer of the Apple II power supply and the first Macintosh engineering manager, was an extraordinary, opinionated individual who could expound brilliantly on a startling range of topics. He was the unlikely combination of a committed socialist and a multimillionaire by virtue of his being one of Apple's earliest employees. On one occasion, the Mac team hired an older analog engineer to work on the disk controller, paying him almost twice Burl's salary, even though he was only doing a small fraction of the work. When we complained, Rod invoked his economic theories about how people should be paid according to their needs instead of their talents. We didn't necessarily buy that, but we really weren't working mainly for the money, and Rod was so charmingly philosophical that we let it slide. Our offices at Texaco Towers were kind of quaint by Apple standards. Most of Apple's offices were outfitted with high-tech, partitioned Herman Miller cubicles, but Texaco Towers was more old-fashioned, with funky, older desks and second-hand furniture. Steve was generally tight with money and usually turned down any extravagant requests. For example, he allowed us to buy an IBM PC to dissect for $2,000 in August of 1981. But nixed our similar request for a $20,000 Xerox Star. Most afternoons, Burl and I used to walk down to the nearby Texaco station to get soft drinks from their vending machine. But one summer afternoon in 1981, Steve brought a visiting dignitary by for a demo while we were out. Frustrated by our absence, Steve had a refrigerator installed and stocked with soft drinks so we wouldn't have to miss work time to get beverages, making free sodas our first unusual perquisite. As the team grew in 1982, our lifestyle began to change. We moved from Texaco Towers to Bandley 4 back at the center of the main campus, and the salaries of the early team increased as we had to pay competitive salaries to newcomers. Bandley 4 was a typical Apple building, a set of temporary quarters for the Mac team until the much larger Bandley 3 could be renovated to accommodate us. When Bandley 3 was ready in the summer of 1983, the design of our new quarters showed the first hints of extravagance. The software team was ensconced in a large area with glass doors that we dubbed the Fishbowl since a passerby could observe us without opening the door. The showpiece of the building was a large atrium in the lobby with fancy skylights and some interesting furnishings. To one side of the lobby were two video games, which we had the opportunity to purchase cheaply a month or so after moving in. I paid for Burl's favorite, Defender, while Randy Wigginton contributed Joust. On the other side of the lobby was an expensive stereo system purchased by Steve. It featured a compact disc player, then new technology, and a collection of 100 albums, which was just about every compact disc that had been released at the time. Bandley 3 also had a small kitchen near the software area, with a much bigger refrigerator and corresponding supply of soft drinks than we had in Texaco Towers. Steve decided that sodas weren't very healthy and had the refrigerator stocked with expensive Odwalla fruit juices, delivered fresh every day, along with an assortment of other beverages. In the spring of 1984, right about the time that I left Apple, the lobby began to fill up with more interesting artifacts purchased by Steve. There was an outrageously expensive Bösendorfer piano, later joined by a BMW motorcycle. These items were supposedly on display as examples of exquisite craftsmanship, though it was rumored that Steve was only trying to impress Hartmut Esslinger of Frog Design, an industrial designer that he was enamored with. That was right around the time that the 100-person Macintosh division merged with the 250-person Lisa division, with the Macintosh people occupying most of the management roles. The Mac had completed its journey from a funky research project to the center of the company, but I continue to think that it was much more fun when we had fewer resources.